Bev. Bev's facts not only check out, but they're always entertaining. I find it interesting that the Washington Post isn't so excited about your stories. The Washington Post had a little problem today. They forgot to pay their network solutions bill and had no email because their domain expired. They managed to buy it back by 3 o'clock in the afternoon before somebody in the newsroom picked it up and, you know, negotiated for a raise. But there's another problem with the Internet. And our last speaker is truly a man of action. There are not too many citizens when kind of stumbling upon a problem and learning about it and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger are willing to go to the extents that this man has to pretty much protect democracy. And so our last speaker is Andy Stevenson.
Before I begin tonight, I'd like to thank everybody for coming. I appreciate your showing up, and Barbara and Bev. Bev has been my mentor throughout this whole process, and I really hold her in high regard. You brought up some pretty scary stuff tonight, Bev. You certainly did.
You have it.
I'm also going to take tonight officially. I was asked the other evening by Dennis Kucinich to endorse his campaign. And so tonight I am prepared to publicly state that I do endorse Dennis Kucinich for president because Dennis, at the time when we were at our lowest point, put the Diebold memos out and said, yes, come get me. So for that, so people ask me all the time, what can I do as a citizen? Well, if you're like me, you'll spend 12 hours a day behind a computer screen Googling with Bev. I think our most important thing right now is to register and vote. I mean, that is our vote is the cornerstone and our most basic right. So we need to protect that vote by exercising it. I'm going to the caucus tomorrow, yes. And go to the caucuses tomorrow, and no matter who you caucus for, it's still important to go. Ask questions. Get involved. I ask our public officials questions all the time. I go to Olympia and get in their face with a camera and ask them questions. They don't like me for it, but I don't care. They're working for me, not the other way around. Donate time and money to causes and organizations that are working to protect your vote. Those people that are looking and searching and looking for the truth, help those people out. They you know, we're, as Bev can tell you, we are an overworked group. We spend a lot of time doing research and it's tough doing it by yourself. And the support group is great to have. Take ownership of your vote. It's your vote. It does not belong to the public officials. It does not belong to the Secretary of State. It does not belong to the county auditor. It belongs to you. You need to take ownership of it and make sure that it's protected. I can't do it for you. Bev can't do it. Barbara can't do it. We have to do it for ourselves. It's that important. We must demand a voter-verified paper ballot. You do not let the public officials carry you down this little road where it's a paper trail, or it's an audit trail, or it's a paper receipt. You talk in it in terms of a ballot. Always. I want a voter-verified paper ballot, not a vapor ballot. Language is important. I mean, we have a long tradition of in this country where we have a ballot, not a paper trail. That's a paper trail. It's not a ballot. It's not a computer problem, as Bev said earlier. It's an audit problem. We don't take the stairs out of a building, as Barbara said, because there's handicapped people. We leave those stairs in because the other people need to get out of the building. We need to look at open source public software. We cannot allow these companies to surreptitiously steal our vote. It must be open. It must be available for every single person to review, whether we understand it or not. The Australian system is a great model. They use a touchscreen, which prints an optical scan ballot. It's open for everyone to see. It's not private. In fact, you can go to the website right now for the Australian voting system. Pardon me. And download the download the software onto your system, set up an election, and run it. It's a great system. It works beautifully. Support legislation. This is the key right now. There's a lot of legislation out there. As Bev said, Linda Franz up here in the audience, she works tirelessly on legislation, and I've seen her dog the legislators down in Olympia, and she does a wonderful job. Recently, well, last session, she had worked on a bill that gives us the protections we need. It requires a paper ballot. It requires open source software. It requires random manual audits of the equipment. 5%. That bill right now is in the House and before the Senate. We need to be calling every single one of our legislators to get this passed. The House bill is 2978, and the Senate bill is 6717. Mr. Reed, our current Secretary of State, has a bill, 2745. And it leaves out a lot of the protections that we need. And even though the Pentagon has killed the CERV program, the internet voting scheme that they had, I'm not quite sure that Mr. Reed's bill closes the door to internet voting. There are a couple of companies that are working towards an internet solution, and I don't think that we are quite ready for that at this point. So 2745 is the Secretary of State's bill, and it falls far short of what we need. I'm a man of few words. I own a Subway. Usually I have a yellow counter behind me, and I'm wearing a green shirt and a funny hat. But I am so committed to this one issue. It is the one issue that affects every single one of us. The Secretary of State is not a very political position. He deals with voting. And I think our current Secretary of State, Mr. Reed, needs to start dealing with the voting issues and coming around to our side of things. I'm going to borrow George Bush's words here for a second, if you don't mind. As far as a paper ballot is concerned, you're either with us or you're against us. So that's all I have to say. I was yielding some time to Bev. I'm not a man of many words, but as you go out tonight, if you would like to stop, please stop at my table. There's a lot of literature out there, brochures, websites, things you can visit, things you can do, get involved, and spread the message. Teach 10 others about this. It's very important. If we all teach 10 people, everybody will know, and the light of truth will shine on these companies, and they're going to have to open up to us. And that's all I've got to say, guys. Thank you.
Okay, we've got 5 questions down here. I don't know if anybody else was interested in forwarding a question. You've got some as well. If you want to go ahead and bring them on over to me. She's way behind me. The first one's for Dr. Simons. Exit polls are used in third world countries to confirm elections. Should statistical methodology be used to trigger recounts automatically when anomalies are detected?
These are on, yes, okay. I kind of like the California model where there's a mandatory 1% recount. The H.R. 2239, which wasn't mentioned, but that's Rush Holt's bill requiring a voter-verified paper ballot and open source or public source software, mandates a 0.5% recount. The nice thing about a recount is that you have a chance of catching some anomalies. Now, what happens, of course, with these paperless touchscreen machines, and this absolutely slays me for the California vote, what they do is, computer science don't believe this one, what they do is they print out the ballot images at the end of the day, and then they manually recount those. Now, think about it. If you get a discrepancy, you've got a real problem. But so the recount should reflect what's in the computer. I mean, plain and simple. It tells you nothing about what the voters intended. I mean, it is not a voter-verified ballot at all. And so it's not a recount. It's really not a recount. So I like the idea of mandatory recounts, which are meaningful recounts. And I think they should be always be required independent of statistical results, because if you're going to fix an election, you find out what that statistical spread is, and you just make sure you miss it. There are ways of doing that.
Okay. There is, the second question is kind of a quickie about how many, and this is also for Dr. Simons, about how many lines of code, source, language, and machine code, are involved, I'm assuming, in an election, in a voting system.
In a voting system? Well, I don't know. I've never seen it. And I should just say that, I mean, I know that there are more. When I first got involved with this, I thought, oh, you know. Okay, we someone out here knows.
When Wiley quit certifying in 1996, when they quit certifying the software, they said it was 900,000 lines long.
And I'm glad you mentioned this, the commercial code, because let me just mention briefly, with the SERV voting system, I mean, basically, they're using Windows there. And I know that Diebold, I believe it's Diebold, uses Windows CE. So if you're going to include lines of code, you sort of almost, I mean, I think you kind of have to count that too. And so that gets real big. And of course, one of the interesting things about Windows CE is that it's, you can go in and change it. So you can change Windows CE. In fact, it's intended for that. And yet it's considered commercial off-the-shelf software and never gets inspected.
Okay, this is another question for Dr. Simons. How complex are the algorithms expressed in the code contained in voting equipment on a scale of 1 to 10 for all software products?
Well, like I said, I've never seen this, but do you want to comment on that? I can say a little bit about SERP. We didn't see that code either. But when you think about the problems of doing internet voting, in the case of SERV, they were planning to have it for 7 states, 50 counties, of course, Washington State being one of those states. Each state, each county has a different ballot. And so they and different states have different laws about how ballots get dealt with and counted and how you present the material. So even just the simple problem of producing the ballots for people to vote on, it turns out to be non-trivial. This has been quite an interesting experience for me, because when I first started doing this, I thought, well, isn't this a trivial problem? You know, you got the vote, you count the votes, that's it. What's the big deal? Now, you know, so it's more complicated than I had realized, certainly something like SERV. I still have to wonder if it has to be as messy as it's being made out to be, but that's a different issue.
Okay, here's a question for all three of you. What legal recourse do we have to stop uncertified systems from being used in the presidential election in November 2004?
Can I speak to this one first, please?
It's for all of you, so you guys fight it out yourself.
Recently, I was down in Olympia with my camera again. I did a public records request from the Secretary of State's office. Currently in King County, we're using GEMS database 1.18.18. I believe that was the one in California that was uncertifiable, was the quote. Our Secretary of State saw fit to certify this software. Let me back up. State law requires that for a system or software to be certified within the state, that it needs to be A, certified in another state, and used in that state's election. Well, GEMS 1.18.18 was certified by the Secretary of State's office by our Assistant Secretary of State in September of 2003, prior to it being certified by California and used in the California recall. And as I said, the California Secretary of State's office has called it uncertifiable. So we're using that here in King County now. So there are problems with certification. As Barbara will tell you, certification doesn't mean squat.
And stay tuned in terms of legal recourse. One of the things I think there's many areas that have promise. One area that has a lot of promise is consumer protection law. And literally stay tuned. Within a week you'll see some action in terms of taking some of this stuff into the courts. But you see, the deal is it doesn't need to cost the counties money because they made a mistake, because they got sold something that they can go right back using consumer protection laws and force the manufacturer to pay for retrofitting. For example, in California, there's three counties that actually got a classic bait and switch. They were sold one thing. It didn't exist. And so they said, let's walk on down the road and get this thing. They took delivery on it. And it still, to this day, has not been certified. And they've got an election coming up in 3 weeks. And they've got a system that's illegal to use. That's called bait and switch. There are laws already on the books in all 50 states for consumer protection. So one of the things we need to do is start filing consumer protection lawsuits. Start filing lawsuits against the states and the election officials to enjoin them against using anything that doesn't meet our own regulations. Hello. There are a number of kinds of lawsuits, and there are a number of them that are proceeding ahead, and you're going to start hearing more about those because it's a simple continuum. First, we expect the manufacturers to produce something that is what we need. If they don't, we expect our elections and our public officials to protect us. If they don't, we've got to go to court. And if that doesn't work, folks, we've got to take to the streets next fall.
If I can make just one brief comment about this situation, there's a fundamental problem, which is that we don't have adequate laws to deal with this kind of situation. If we find out that there's a problem with an election, well, we saw that in Florida in 2000. We have no way to hold another election or to run things over again. I don't know if that's why one of the reasons why the DOD decided to kill serve, but you can imagine if they had conducted the internet voting and if it had turned out that there was a problem that could be shown to be a problem. I mean, there could easily be problems that people wouldn't be able to prove. But if you could prove it, then what did they do? What if the election was really close? I mean, there's no recourse.
Okay, this is a fun one. This is for Bev or Andy. What were the crimes that the five Diebold executives and managers were convicted? Just curious.
I'll take the first three. He can take the last two. The first three, the founders of the company that Diebold bought. Norton Cooper was convicted of defrauding the Canadian government, did a year in prison. Then he was ordered to get away from this elections company because not only that, but every investment that he was touting was going south so fast that he was actually devaluing the Vancouver Stock Exchange. So they told him to get out of there. There's another guy named Charles Hong Lee. He's not actually a convicted felon. He was merely ordered by the courts in two separate occasions to, in the first case, he was ordered to pay $555,000 in restitution for bilking investments in a fraudulent stock scheme. And in the second time, he was accused of bilking Chinese immigrants out of their life savings, and he ran off with about $700,000 there. The third fella actually was a director of the company up until 1992. Before 1992, he stole $18 million from four companies, then laundered the money through a Swiss bank account, which first went through the Cayman Islands. He was actually arrested for money laundering, grand theft, and tax evasion. But before they could put him in jail, he was arrested in the United States on stock fraud. He did 4 years here, and he's still in jail right now in Canada. And now you for the recent ones.
Yes, the recent ones. Well, Jeffrey Dean was a 23-count felon, and I never can, you know, what is the name of that law firm? Huey, Dewey, and Lewis. Anyway, they were a law firm downtown here in Seattle, and he embezzled almost $500,000. And his crime was described as extraordinary technical skill. And basically what he did is he put back doors into the computerized accounting software and skimmed off the top. And it was only because there were two little old ladies that didn't quite trust the new accounting system, keeping a manual set of books on paper, that they caught this guy. And that was the only way they caught it.
Let's hear it for the little old ladies.
Let's hear it for the little old ladies. Absolutely. Now, his friend, John Elder, he wasn't too bad. He was only a cocaine smuggler. But this gentleman is the gentleman that's counting, collecting, and sorting the incoming absentee ballots in King County to this day. So my advice to you is this fall when you go to, if you're voting absentee, this fall when you vote, don't mail it in. Take it to a polling station because that's the only way you can be sure that your vote is going to go in and be possibly counted correctly, because we don't know, because we're using uncertified software for 5.5 years in our county. So, yeah, so John Elder and Jeffrey Dean, Charles Hong Lee, Michael K. Gray,
and Norton Cooper.
Those are the felons in the Diebold company.
All righty. This is a question for Bev. Can you comment on Bellevue, Washington-based VoteHere.net?
Can I comment on VoteHere? As far as I know, one of the main things that they're working on is putting in what they call an electronic verification system for our vote. That doesn't do it. It fails the of the people, for the people, and by the people. Because what you got is a handful of cronies who are computer scientists and corporate execs figuring out the system. Now, what it is, from what I understand after reading the thing, with the VoteHere system, after you vote, you get a receipt, and it has a code number on it, and then you take that and you compare it with and see if your vote was counted correctly. But, you see, that doesn't do the total. I'm sure they have a system for the total. Bottom line is, let's not take the people out of We the People. Let's keep us involved. When they say we're losing interest in voting, well, no wonder we're saying, you know, you can't be involved, put it on a machine, and don't ask us how it's counted. Well, that doesn't really lend yourself to really being motivated. But, I'm not going to say a lot other than I don't find their electronic verification solution to be acceptable, and I never will.
Just curious, what sort of people are on the board of VoteHere?
Robert Gates, at least he was up until recently. He was a former CIA director who is the head of the George Bush School of Business. For a long time, Admiral Bill Owens was, and he was on the Defense Policy Board with Pearl and Wolfowitz and those guys. Really close friend of Dick Cheney. Right now, though, former Secretary of State Ralph Monroe is the chairman, and he's out there pushing the VoteHere system. And, in fact, we have kind of a revolving door employment between the Washington State Secretaries of State and Elections Division and VoteHere. The Assistant State Elections Director was a VoteHere employee for 3 years, and then she went for a very short stint to King County, and then she's now the Assistant State Elections Director.
And I'd like to add there, she did that in violation of state ethics laws, and so did Ralph Monroe. They both went there in violation of state law.
We're working on it.
Well, we went.
Yeah.
Bev and I are on our famous visits. I take this from Bobby Rosevich. It was so funny because when he told me that day that to back off or I would get a visit, I said, from who? Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny? But we've made some visits to key people in Olympia, and we're working on some things.
And the problem with the ethics complaint that I saw that made me less motivated is that they don't necessarily go public, and like on a really, really bad one, there might be a fine of $5,000, which no one ever hears about, but they let the guy negotiate it out privately. And so I was like, well, you know, there's no real teeth in that, unfortunately. It would be great if we could file it and then get it into the press. I think that's the angle that it would need to take.